week, we'll look at a news story which has a direct relevance to the beautiful religion of Islam, and we'll break it down from a Muslim perspective. Today, we're going to examine the attempt by Western societies to impose LGBTQ ideology onto Muslims. Islam has a very clear prohibition on homosexual acts. But despite this, Western nations have been trying to persuade Muslims to abandon their principles. And pro-LGBTQ propaganda is nowhere more evident than in the school system, as the following report explains.
A new challenge faces religious communities in the Western world. A push to introduce controversial same-sex relationship education material onto children at state schools. The issue has become such a hot-button topic that protests have flared up across Britain and in the US in recent years, with a recent example taking place in South Wales.
Please let children be children. Say no to our SE and save our children.
Although the issue has upset religious Jewish and Christian communities, Muslims have made the biggest push to challenge what's being described as LGBT indoctrination in primary schools. Back in 2019, UK cities witnessed protest after a UK Birmingham school's introduction of a pro-LGBT curriculum called No Outsiders. In 2021, parents in East London condemned their local school for allegedly sexualizing children with a relationship and sex education lesson, or RSE, which also included same-sex narratives. And in October 2022, hundreds of parents protested in Michigan, USA, over a local school's use of LGBT books. Back in Britain, a school in England's West Midlands sparked a row after inviting a self-described gay Muslim to address Muslim students. His visit was challenged by students and parents. Supporters of the lesson say it's about combating intolerance towards the gay community. However, religious communities say they have a right to practice their faith and raise their children with their own values.
Well, joining us in the studio today to talk about Western nations and LGBTQ propaganda is Shakil Afsar, an activist from Birmingham in the UK, where he closely was involved in protests against LGBTQ teaching in primary schools. And joining us on Skype from Iraq is Sheikh Jafar Ladak, an Islamic scholar and the Imam of Bab al-Ilm Centre in Leeds. Thank you very much for joining us on the show, Shakil. It's a pleasure to have you. Now, just tell me, let's go back, 2019, I think it was, the issue in Birmingham. There's a massive protest movement with Muslims up there. Tell me your experience.
Well, to be honest, it was a group of parents who were just standing up and asking for the same privilege the LGBT community have been fighting, well, apparently fighting for many years. Parents were only reiterating the fact that their children are very young, that this is a very sensitive subject, and that the fact that they feel that their religious, moral and philosophical convictions are being watered down. My actual feeling towards this all was there was a barbaric amount of discrimination from the LGBT community towards these innocent parents who were only standing and trying to defend the innocence of their children. It was so bad to the point where we were labelled extremists, we were labelled bigots. People were being stopped and, you know, questioned on what jobs they do, where they do, being referred to prevent. It was an absolutely dreadful time.
So basically, for expressing your freedom of speech, for your own views on the subject, parents were being branded extremists and terrorists.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a group of people who are claiming equality, but then are completely disallowing what we believe. They claim tolerance, but are being completely intolerant towards our beliefs. We have never, as people from Birmingham and parents, I can vouch that we have never questioned the rights or wrongs of homosexuality. According to our religion, is forbidden, but we have never questioned these people. We have never asked them to stop what they're doing. We are merely and are still asking them to stop indoctrinating our children and pushing their world views on our innocent, young, innocent minds. You know, if it was they were a bit older, we would have enough time to educate our children about Islam or Christianity or any other Abrahamic faith. But the fact that this is being pushed, I actually believe that there is a bigger agenda to water down our religious values of British Muslims. And this is in overdrive. It's complete overdrive.
And obviously this was the No Outsiders initiative which was being pushed into schools in Birmingham.
Absolutely.
Which was mentioned in the report.
Absolutely.
What kind of stuff was going on in their outsiders?
Well, look, young Muslim children whose parents are praying namaz five times a day, the children were coming home with books such as Princess Boy, which would suggest a transgender lifestyle, a boy dressing as a girl being acceptable. Mm. Parents were horrified. These are parents who wake up at the crack of dawn to, you know, pray to their Lord, ask for forgiveness and try to be good, peaceful human beings. And their children are coming home with books that are completely contradictory to everything that their religion says.
I think one thing that bothers a lot of parents as well is the fact that it's introduced in primary school. So it's quite a young age we're dealing
with.
And I think a lot of parents were saying like they didn't want any relationship education at that age, regardless of same gender or not. Before we carry on the talk, Shaquille, let's bring in another voice onto this issue. We have a Sheikh Jaffer Ladak coming to us via Skype from Iraq. Welcome to the show, Sheikh. Thank you for joining us. First of all, why are Muslim parents so upset by this RSE curriculum, in your view? What's the big issue?
The development of a child goes through stages. And there are times in which a child is capable of understanding something fully, where a child has to learn something at a preparatory stage, and other times when a child cannot be talked to about certain things because the mind is maybe ill-prepared or immature to be able to understand what it's being told or the images that it's consuming. And we know that from all sorts of social studies. If you show children acts of violence, for example, they think that this is normal and they will adopt those actions without realizing the consequences of it. If a child sees another child pulling someone's hair or hitting someone, and they're not taught that these behaviors are not correct, when they adopt these for themselves, it becomes part and parcel of whom they are. In the same way, of course, every human being has innate nature, desires, curiosities. The fear that many parents have is, along with the decoupling of traditional moral understanding, the fear that parents have is that certain educational ideas are heaping content, especially same-sex content, content for exploring one's body, being able to be completely free and open in children when they are not yet mature enough to understand the content or the consequences of those content. And as a result, parents are protesting. Parents are pulling their children out of school. Some parents are even leaving the country out of fear of what the medium to long-term moral situation of the country will be like.
Another example of what's been going on is an effort that was made last year at a UK school to essentially reinterpret the Quran from a pro-LGBT position. Is there any room for debate on this subject, Sheikh?
The Quran places the identity of a human being in relationship to his creator, God Almighty. As an example, we get this from the verses that speak about the Mi'raj, the ascension of the blessed Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him and his noble family, where the verse says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Subhanalladhi asra bi'abdihi layla min al-masjid al-harami ila al-masjid al-aqsa. That blessed is he, the Prophet, the servant of Allah who went on this journey. The point is that even the peak of creation, the best of creation, was referred to as his identity as a servant of God alone. What we're seeing here is that some of these movements are seeking to shift the identity of a person and subsume them either within a sexual identity or within a gender-based identity, or even sometimes based on pronouns, sometimes even further, God forbid, people are identifying themselves as animals and things like this. So from the Islamic perspective, our identity is not one that is created and shaped and reshaped by social ideals of the time. We have this until today. This might be a little bit controversial, but try to understand it. When we say, I am white, or I am black, or I am brown, there is no such thing. It's just the melatonin of my skin. right? There's no such thing as a black person or a white person per se. It's just the melatonin or lack thereof in my skin. There's no such thing as a Pakistani or an Iraqi or an Arab. These are social terms that we have created for ourselves. In Islam, our identity is related to God. Our identity is related to our religion. And so when a Muslim or non-Muslim comes forward and says that I can be this type of person or I can be that type of person, I have to think about whether this is social conditioning or whether this is actually something that is within the framework of the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him and his family. And those who try to start by saying, I am this type of Muslim, or I am with these sorts of pronouns, we have to recognize that these things are social constructs. They have no value in and of themselves, and sometimes they're actually in direct conflict with Islam. I would argue that in this case, when this person came and said, I am a gay Muslim, to place the idea of his sexuality and his gayness or his lust for fellow men ahead of his Islam, or to subsume his Islam within that identity, is something that is not acceptable within Islam and actually goes against Islam.
And finally, given that the UK is a secular country, should Western Muslims be more tolerant of this type of education, would you say, Sheikh?
But if a society is truly secular, then it allows for that space for there to be sort of a battleground of ideas, a marketplace of ideas. And if one group of people want to be able to put forward their ideas as robustly as they are, and we can see in the LGBTQ community that it's being supported to the tune of hundreds of millions of pounds. It's being supported with a great amount of media landscape. Then from the same perspective, it's truly a secular society, and truly it should be a marketplace of ideas. The traditional values of religion and family and the evidences these communities have on this side should be as forthcoming and as welcomed as any other sort of idea. I should feel free to be able to put forth my understanding of this matter, as well as somebody else. But the fear that we have at the moment, that many Muslims have, is that if they speak about their traditional family values, about their religious values, starting from the perspective of God, what is right, what is wrong morally, the Muslim society at the moment feels very shut down. In fact, it actually feels under threat.
Well, thank you very much, Sheikh. We'll have to leave it there for now. But thank you for joining us via Skype, and apologies for any technical issues that occurred during the talk. Well, before we continue this discussion, let's take a look at what people on the streets of London have to say about this.
I don't think it's appropriate to put LGBT into the curriculum. I think there are far more important things than LGBT. Teaching children at an early age about gender is quite confusing for them, and because the child's brain doesn't develop till the age of 27, so there's a lot of confusion that can take place. So why not teach them how to look after themselves, nutrition, teach them how to cook, yeah, teach them how to look after their money, teach them about finance, teach them about the big wider world, which is far more important.
If they're at a young age, I'm against it, of course, because the children, they don't have right for like having an opinion, so they have like their parents that support or against it, so they should take their parents' permission before asking or pursuing any of that in the education system. It shouldn't be like taught straight to kids without the consent or any form of agreement from the parents.
Personally, I don't think so, especially at like primary school level. I don't think it's necessary. Maybe a little bit older to understand what's happening and that there are people like that, but I don't think, especially as young children.
I disagree with them, especially in the primary school. They start to teach them, taught them from reception, maybe nursery. Yeah, I was working in a nursery and they started the big, a rule or regular to do it. But I disagree with them. It's still a small children. They can't make their own decision. they should be like maybe bigger enough. If some child asks, maybe they can answer them. But if not, why you put these children in this situation? I don't like it. I disagree with it, 100%.
I don't think it's appropriate because they're really young, and also some people are different religions and they don't agree with this stuff and they're still talking about it. So I think it's a bit rude that they're talking about it when everybody doesn't agree with this. I was taught about it, I think, 2 months ago. I felt a bit awkward since I'm a Muslim. I don't agree with this type of stuff. And they kept talking about it, saying that we should be nice about it. Obviously, we should, but it just felt really awkward in the situation.
In an apparent effort to tarnish parent protests, media pundits and LGBT activists have described critics as radical extremists. However, it isn't Muslims only who are concerned by this issue, as a British Jewish activist made clear to us earlier on.
Jewish people are generally very, very concerned about this. I live myself in Gated, and I actually admire you very much that you're actually involved in this. It's a very, very important thing. And what I want to point out as a Jewish person, this is not just a Jewish issue. And I want to speak, before I speak, I'll give a disclaimer, and then I'll show you how. I'm not representing an organization. I'm not representing any other person other than myself. But on the other hand, I am representing humanity. This is not just a religious issue. This is an issue which is literally an issue which affects humanity. Anybody who can speak up is speaking up for humanity. He's not speaking up necessarily, he's speaking up for religion, he's speaking up for God, yes, but he's speaking up for humanity. And this also puts into question a very, very, very big, in a very big way, that until now the narrative they've been giving us is that they're doing this because they're concerned about terrorism and extremism. This, they cannot say this anymore, because even the doctors who were told that they were actually going to be teaching this stuff, most of the doctors were not interested.
Well, we're going to head back to the discussion now of our in-studio guest, Shaquille. So, Shaquille, we heard from people from the streets of London. It seems to me as if a lot of parents, particularly, are just kind of creeped out by the idea that kids so young are being introduced to any kind of relationship education, let alone this particular same-gender identity.
You're absolutely right. Like I said, a parent, especially the mother, bears this child with the most excruciating pain, and then the fact that that child's is her responsibility to nurture physically, nurture mentally. If there's any issue with that child, she will be responsible. But when that mother becomes concerned about her child's mental welfare, the things that her child is learning, and then the fact that it could put the child in a worse position, she's completely disallowed and called a radical, called an extremist. And this is a woman who has bared this child through the most excruciating pain any human body could endure. And then, you know, it's absolutely discrimination, open discrimination.
And I think that another strange aspect to all this is the fact that basically the state is intervening to teach other people's kids about relationships and so on, when the parents don't even seem to be consulted. Were the parents being consulted
in Birmingham? This is where the major issue started for us in the city of Birmingham, was the fact that young children were coming home with sensitive books like Princess Boy, like my Cha-Cha, which means my uncle in Asian, is gay. Parents were, you know, horrified. Parents were very concerned that the fact that RSE has a 52-page guidance sheet, no curriculum has a 52-page guidance sheet, yet RSE comes with a 52-page guidance sheet teaching the people who will be delivering it how to do it, how to be mindful, how to keep age appropriateness to account, and moreover, consultations. People in sensitive areas must be consulted, but no. Any parent that speaks up is labelled an extremist. And I'm very glad that you posted this video about walking around the streets, because we did the same thing with one of the mainstream channels and they didn't air it. Every person they were questioning, majority of them being English Christian or English people, and they categorically said, no, primary school is not the age to be teaching such sensitive subjects to any child. You know, let them be innocent, let them have that right to be children. We're moving sexualization from the back of the child's mind right to the front at such an age when UK has synonymously known to have underage pregnancies. UK, you know, it's all the evidence is there, yet They continue to push it. They continue to force it, majority on ethnic minority and people of Abrahamic faiths.
It is interesting. Public opinion does seem to have a massive appetite for debating this issue at the very least.
Absolutely.
A recent petition got well over 100,000 signatures, and it was calling for a ban of LGBT relationship education in the RSE curriculum. Let me quickly ask you about the media reaction that you received. You was a big activist in Birmingham at the time.
Yeah.
How did the media treat you?
The media completely vilified me. Every single report or any single interview that I did, at a point I had to get my own teams recording it because of the fact of how much was being chopped and changed. I was smeared to be some sort of criminal. I was smeared to be bringing gangs of mobs of people. And these are brothers and sisters of the children who are at the school. These are mothers and fathers, uncles, grandparents of the children who are at the school. And, you know, they've completely vilified me to the point where I had police markers on my car. I had police markers on my children's school. A lot of people completely disallowed the fact when I said, I have children of my own. On this particular school, it was my niece and nephew, which are as good as my children. But I have kids on my own. I know how a parent feels when your child is being indoctrinated so, you know, viciously. You know, it wasn't even a subtle, it was a vicious indoctrination. Mm. You are a girl today, or you can maybe be a boy tomorrow. This was the level the schools were going. And there is, unfortunately, a massive LGBT extremist lobby. Now, for me personally, as a parent, I don't mind what people do in the comfort of their own homes, as long as they don't force that on me. Mm. But there is an extremist lobby which is lobbying around majority Muslim areas. We are the only last religion who are keeping their morals intact, who are keeping their philosophical convictions intact, and will not bend them. Yeah. But effectively, what the state is doing is teaching Muslim children. When you say to a Muslim child, it's okay to be homosexual, it's equivalent to teaching them it's okay to eat pork, or it's okay to drink alcohol, or it's okay to commit fornication without, being in the confines of marriage. It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, because obviously it's supposed to be a secular society in the sense that you have a right to practice your faith without someone forcing their views down your throat.
Absolutely.
And it seems strange to me as well that you have the LGBT side of the argument claiming that actually it's religion forcing their views onto the LGBT community. But actually, it appears that this is the reverse case, where actually they're forcing their views onto our kids.
Absolutely.
And trying to get kids being taught by teachers and strangers, essentially. Shaquille, I'm going to have to end it there
because
we have run
much.
Out of time, but
brilliant.
I really appreciate you being with
thank
us.
Thank you very much.
And yes, thank you to everyone at home, and thank you to the guests, of course. For now, that's it, but we will be back next week for another edition of Eye on Islam. Salaamu Alaikum for now.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRab English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
الان بعضیا کارهای قشنگ میکنن ولی خدایی نیستا.
In today's world, there are some people who do good works, but their works are not godly. The works that we do in this world are usually of four types. One type is work done for money. Without money, we don't do it, even if this work is beneficial for us. There are still some people who do their work because of force and compulsion of others. This is like the duties that some forces do in the army. The third group is those who do their work with deception. It means that they do their work by deceiving others. The last group are those people who do their work for the cause of Allah. Such people have trust in Allah instead of force, money, or tricks. These people have faith in Allah and consider Him as the sole creator of the world and the sole administrator of the whole affairs of the universe. Allah's blessings, according to the Holy Quran, belongs to such people. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Iran's President Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi seeks to operationalize a 25-year partnership agreement with China during his state visit to Beijing, the President's Deputy Chief of Staff for Political Affairs has said. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote in this regard, at the invitation of Chinese President Xi Jinping, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi paid a visit to China. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Hua Chunying announced recently. Analysts said that Raisi's first visit to China since taking office in 2021 will further implement the comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Iran and shows the Raisi administration's unwavering determination to promote the Look to the East policy. Iran's Look to the East policy meant the transition from its policy of negative balancing and non-alignment to building alliances with non-Western world powers that have similar political structures to Iran, such as Russia and China. According to IRNA, the official news agency of Iran, delegations from both sides are due to sign cooperation documents. Raisi will also take part in meetings with Chinese businessmen and Iranians living in China. China is Iran's largest trade partner, IRNA said, citing 10-month statistics from Iranian customs authorities. Iran's exports to Beijing stood at $12.6 billion, while it imported $12.7 billion worth of goods from China. The top priority of Raisi's visit this time should be to further and develop China-Iran Comprehensive Strategic Partnership and push forward the 25-year cooperation agreement and further implement it, Tang Zhikao, a West Asia region analyst at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, told the Global Times recently. Iran and China have a strong economic ties, especially in the fields of energy, transit, agriculture, trade and investment. In 2021, both countries signed a 25-year strategic cooperation pact set to include political, strategic and economic components. When Chinese Vice Premier Hu Chunhua met with Raisi in Iranian capital Tehran in December 2022, Raisi stressed that no matter how the international and regional landscapes change, Iran will remain firmly committed to deepening the comprehensive strategic partnership between the two countries. The two sides have set goals in several high-level exchanges, but the progress in recent years has been delayed due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and changes in the surrounding environment. The key point of Raisi's visit is to push forward the process because it is beneficial to the people of both sides, Tang stressed. Experts also said that China and Iran have many international issues of common concern, including Afghanistan, regional stability and development, climate change, regional security, energy security, and others which need to be discussed. This visit can be seen as a very important upgrade in Iran-China relations, Zhu Yongbiao, executive director of the Research Center for the Belt and Road at Lanzhou University, told the Global Times. Zhu said cooperation under the framework of the Belt and Road Initiative and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization will give China and Iran more space for cooperation. It is foreseeable that after this meeting, Iran-China relations will enter a new and higher stage. Meanwhile, Politico noted Raisi's visit to Beijing is expected to deepen ties between the two political and economic partners that are opposed to the U.S.-led Western domination of international affairs. Politico added the two leaders met last September in Samarkand, Uzbekistan, when Xi underscored China's support for Iran. In December, Raisi pledged to remain committed to deepening the strategic partnership during a meeting with Chinese Vice Premier Hu Xunhua in Tehran. China is a major buyer of Iranian oil and an important source of investment in the West Asia region country. In 2021, Iran and China signed a 25-year strategic cooperation agreement that covered major economic activities from oil and mining to industry, transportation and agriculture. Politico added, both countries have had tense relations with the United States and have sought to project themselves as a counterweight to American power alongside Russia.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim. Dini al-Islami dini wal-Azam ghayru dini Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about some of the Islamic rules or laws about purity according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, That's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about the rules of Tahara or purification based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, let me ask you this question. You know, many times we've been told that, you know, we have to actually use two handfuls of water to wash our face when we want to, you know, make wudu, all right?
Yes.
And if we do the third one, the third handful of water, if we use it, it invalidates our wudu. I just wanted to ask you whether this is a correct concept.
Well, probably I think there is a kind of misunderstanding on the part of some people who think that, okay, one should pour two handfuls of water and not more. You know, I think according to the verdicts issued by the religious authorities, it depends largely on your intention and not on the handful of water. You know, so washing wudu parts, like for example your face, your hands, and you know your arms, is obligatory for the first time. Of course, you know it very well. And it is permissible for the second time,
mm-hmm.
but it's haram to wash your hand or your wudu parts for a third time, because it's there is a consensus about it. All religious authorities consider
this as a waste of washing water.
Probably that's not the reason, because for example, if you are, for example, on an ocean, you're on the deck of a ship and there is a lot of water.
Right.
That doesn't mean a waste of water, because you have water everywhere around mm-hmm. you. I think in 80 out of 100 cases, we need to submit ourselves to the will of religion, to what God has said, mm-hmm. without asking for the reason or looking for the reason, because we don't. We don't end up reaching anywhere, you know, and we will not get any answers.
So that was a correct concept.
So we have to be submissive.
Uh-huh.
That's what Islam is about. Okay.
All right.
So we should know that it is not permissible to wash our face and our arms three times. But okay, the criterion in determining each time is one's intention and not one handful of water.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you can pour water three times, four times, five times, okay, and then wash it. And then rub over your arms
uh-huh.
or your face and consider it as one wash.
Mm-hmm.
One wash. That's enough. That's one wash. And then you can again pour water three times, and two handfuls of water, three handfuls of water.
To make sure that enough handful of water is actually good for one session of washing.
One,
you know?
Yes. So it should be counted as one washing and washing twice.
Right.
And then what is forbidden is washing, is to intend to wash the wudu parts for a third time.
Uh-huh.
That's not allowed.
And I see. That's okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are still talking about the rules of purification or tahara. Sheikh Javed, in doing the wudu, especially by way of immersion, all right, as you were referring in the other session, if I remember, is it permissible to submerge the face and the hands into the water more than two times, like the kind of question I asked you before the break?
Yes, we do know that wudu by way of immersion, which is in Arabic terminology called irtimasi. Mm-hmm. Okay, wudu by way of irtimasi or wudu by way of immersion. One can, if he is going to do wudu by way of immersion, he can submerge his face and the hands only twice into the water, only twice, okay? Mm-hmm. Because his hand is supposed to go underwater in an instant, all at once. So that's considered one wash. And it is, of course, the same rule applies to wudu. It is obligatory for the first time, and it's permissible for the second time. And, of course, it is impermissible for a third time. If you want to submerge your hand underwater for a third time, it's not permissible. And when it comes to the hands in the given case, of course, one should intend washing for wudu when bringing them out of water. When you bring your hand or face out of water, it should be intended that it is one wash, or it is, for example, the second wash. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That intention is very important. But you are allowed to dip your hand into the water only once, not twice, because when you pull it out, that is considered to be one wash, because mm-hmm. the water embarrasses, it covers all parts of your hands, your hand. And the same is the case with your face. If you want to submerge your face underwater, so the water is supposed to cover your face in an instant, all at once, and then in one go. You're not going to slowly push your face or hands into the water. You're going to do it at once.
So the second time,
when you pull it out, it's considered one wash. And
yes.
Then when you do it the second time and you pull out your face or hands out of water,
so it's permissible to do it for the second wash.
For the second one, of course,
but
it
the
is.
But the third wash is invalidating.
It's impermissible.
Haram,
yes,
right?
Of course,
just
it
like
is.
The other type of wudu.
Yeah, it is the other type of wudu, which is called sequential wudu.
Yes,
sequential.
Yes, sequential.
Yes, you do it in the order.
Tartini.
In the order of the face and then the right hand and the left. Yes.
But regarding the second wash, is it reprehensible or rewarding,
it
sir?
Is permissible. And
when you say permissible, do you mean
it's reprehensible?
It's not reprehensible. Or rewarding?
It is recommended.
Oh, recommended.
It's recommended, yes.
I see.
it's recommended.
I see. Okay, there is another question I would like to ask you before the program ends, Sheikh Sovit, and that is, we have some kind of oily secretion of the body, and people from person to person, it differs, of course, the amount of secretion I'm talking about, right? That covers, for example, their hair or skin.
Yes.
All right. Is that considered, the naturally oily, secretion of the body, is that considered as a kind of barrier that would prevent the water from reaching the skin or the hair when you're doing the mass or wiping?
Well, according to His Eminence, it is not considered a barrier unless it is so much that it would prevent water from reaching the skin and the hair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is some detail into it. Generally speaking, it's not considered a barrier. And this is the fatwa of most of the religious authorities whose fatwa I have read and whose fatwa I'm acquainted with. And the position is held by His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei. He says that generally speaking, that it's not considered to be a barrier,
mm-hmm.
but unless one the amount of oil, which the secretion, oily secretion, is so much that that prevents water from reaching the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have this is natural oil, and of course. We, in the hot season, people living in hot areas,
mm-hmm.
they do, perspire, they sweat, and, they think that it's oily, but it's just sweat, it's perspiration, you know, and they shouldn't pay attention to it. Because otherwise, if they pay attention and consider that it is very much oily or it's oily, I think they will end up facing problems at the end of the day because they will start suspecting of the secretion, whether it is very much oily or it's not. So I think they should give the benefit of the doubt to themselves in such scenarios.
Right.
Okay. Considering it as a natural perspiration, a natural fluid, the coming out of his skin, and so they should just suffice to washing, and that's it.
I see.
And in the case of in some countries there are people who apply oil to their skin, and especially in the Indian subcontinent where I have been to, they apply oil. Of course, that's not natural oil. They use external oil. They apply it to their skin, and that should be removed. Otherwise,
what if they have a skin problem? And they have to do it, and if they remove it, then their skin will hurt.
Yeah, it will be allergic, or maybe start will hurting. That's another issue, because if water is really harmful,
because if they remove that oil mm-hmm. from their skin, then their skin would have a consequence.
Yeah.
For example, especially in winter times.
So if they have the oil, again, they can apply it, okay? And
washing it simply with like detergent,
yeah,
would hurt their skin.
So they shouldn't. Of course, if they don't use detergent, the oil will not go. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In cases, the scholars have said that if water is harmful, then they should do tayammum.
Uh-huh.
Tayammum is the substitute.
I see. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies.
31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran.
You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.